And a very good morning to you out there in Radio Land. Christmas Eve only, a week away. Hopefully Santa will be good to you. In fact, I would say maybe Santa should get you maybe some new earbuds so you can listen to our great station at the gym or other places where you want, kind of to drown out the background noise. If you do listen the old-fashioned way, if you're right in Marion County, listen to us on the radio, get a nice, powerful FM radio or receiver to crank out 107.1 megahertz, because we have great programming here on The Talking Place. Adam Lepp here. It's a few minutes after 10 in the a.m. on Monday, and of course that means it's time to talk politics, current events, the Donald, and everybody else who comes to mind. Dr. Ron Fineman is joining me, as he often does, on a show we call A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break.
Good morning, Adam.
Yes, good morning, Ronald, with Adam and the professor. Now, first things first, before we get into the serious stuff, before we get into the articles, the prognostications, and the other topics that have certainly been fighting for time among our trillions and zillions of brain cells over the last week, let's get the most important part out first. Everybody! Dear Ronald. Happy birthday, Ron. We want to start the show out with the most important part, because, like myself, you don't get older. You get better.
And Thank you so much, Adam. I really appreciate it.
At this point, you're quite good. Do you mind sharing with our listeners which birthday we're celebrating today?
I have no problem with it. I'm 74 today, Monday, December 17th, yes. And I was born, as I tell students, on the day of the Battle of the Bulge, where Germany was starting to be pushed back in Europe. The news headline on December 17th, 1944, was of that, and that's the day I was born. And also, before my birth, back in 1903, the Wright brothers had the first flight. First aviation. So, I always grew up knowing about, particularly about the Wright brothers, and then later learning about D-Day. The events after D-Day, including the invasion by the Allies, pushing the Germans back on December 16th into 17th, 1944.
So, Ron, even before you were born, exactly 74 years ago, you've had presidential connections and presidential history in your blood. Of course, the Wright brothers from Dayton, Ohio, their flight taking place in North Carolina, but they are natives of the Gem City. Of course, we're on a station named after President Warren G. Harding, in a state that's given us many presidents, including a person who doesn't really live too far from the studio. That is Mr. Kasich, who has tried to be president and very well may end up being president at some time. You never quite know. We'll talk about him, of course, as we often do.
And I'm sure he's going to run. I'm 100% certain he's going to announce. He's just not done it yet.
And another Ohioan, Sherrod Brown, who may have his eyes on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. We talk about all that stuff here on A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the birthday professor. Ron, you've been on with me and Scott almost 100 times, right? I think you were telling me exactly the tally since we started doing these broadcasts.
Well, actually, this is the 75th time with you and 16 times with Scott Spears, so it's 91 times. Yes, it's amazing. But I've had great fun doing it.
And what we've learned, what we've been able to enrich our listeners with has really been quite awesome. I know I've always been interested in presidents, not really in history per se, but I think I've stimulated my own interest in presidents and politics in the great country we call home, and it's kind of extended over to history and things that are, of course, related to presidents, but not necessarily directly involved with presidential trivia, etc. And you know, the U.S. presidents, studying them, Ron, is one of the most interesting things that I think anybody can delve into. It's the office, especially now in the age of social media and all the debates and just all the rumors and, you know, of course, the things going on during this administration. It really is quite fascinating how the office of the president just shapes the entire attitude and ideology of this great nation we live in. And the president really is essentially the leader and most powerful person in the free world. And in many ways, how the United States goes is how the rest of the world goes. And, you know, love him or hate him.
Yes, Donald, I wish to interject here that also it's not just the presidents, but all the presidential elections, the battle for the nomination and the battle for the election and all the candidates all throughout history. I've done many lectures on presidential elections of the past, and many of them are really great. Some are less interesting than others, but many of them are really fantastic.
And the legacy of all
the presidency is great.
Right. Of all the presidential candidates, I mean, we have a lasting effect from Hillary Clinton's runs for president, again, vice presidents. We talked about Gerald Ford, who was the second most recent president to have passed away, and I think that's stimulated some interest with the recent passing of George H.W. Bush and the uniqueness of President Ford never being elected directly. And I still remember, you know, it was over 40 years ago, I still remember watching President Nixon name him as the vice president, then Nixon resigning shortly thereafter and Ford ascending to the office. And we talked about, just before we went on the air, we talked about his vice president, Mr. Rockefeller, who maybe wasn't overly enthused about being in the office as vice president. And again, the circumstances were rather tense and certainly unique. But those things all shape history, and we see an effect for many generations to come. And I said, love him or hate him, Donald Trump is shaping American history today and permanently into the foreseeable future, as he also is unique, that has never had any political elected office experience or military experience. So like President Ford, he's unique and something we may never see again in the United States.
I hope we never do. I wanted to mention on Saturday Night Live, they had a skit about Trump and imagining that he was not elected, how things would have been different if he had not been elected, and how he would have had an easier life if he had not been elected, would not have all the troubles he's had and all that. And, you know, the argument was, they even made fun, they even said of Melania, supposedly because he did not get elected, suddenly lost her accent and spoke perfect English. It was hysterical to watch.
Yeah, you never quite know. Obviously, Ron, anybody gets into a position of power, how he or she handles things will change, and things get uncovered, things you never really would have known or never really would have cared about. Donald Trump was a rather well-loved TV host and businessman, certainly controversial, but the Donald Trump we're seeing now, almost 2 years into his presidency, that's not the Donald Trump from 5 years ago with the TV shows and the hotels and casinos, and it is truly amazing. And that'll happen with any office holder. I mean, we like to see what would happen if Hillary were president, or one of the other Republican candidates, Ted Cruz, for example,
like John Kasich, who had a shot at it but couldn't overcome.
You know,
Trump,
Carly Fiorina, the former CEO of Hewlett Packard, she was an early contender. You never know what would be a case if one of these people were president, and what would be going on with Donald Trump? Would he have decided, well, maybe I should run for governor or senator or some other political office and then try again to be president? You never know. And again, people can write books and articles about this and talk about it till the cows come home. An interesting thing about it is that
fiction. What if? What if books? What if something had been different? Yes.
And the what ifs are many times, arguably, more interesting than the current office itself. Now, Ron, we first got acquainted with you at the station for your book you recently wrote that's become quite popular about presidential assassinations and threats, what could have happened if something would have taken a different course of events. So many times,
Gerald Ford had been killed by Sarah Jane Moore or
Lynette Squeaky
Frome. Indeed, Nelson Rockefeller would have been president, and that scared the Republicans led by Reagan, and they made him drop Rockefeller and pick Bob Dole to run in 1976, and he lost. And after Ford thought if he had kept Rockefeller, he might have beaten Jimmy Carter.
And Bob Dole, also someone who, it seems like he's run for president or been considered as a vice president multiple times, and he's still around. Well, and we remember touching moment
for vice
from,
president in 76.
Yep.
Yeah, and he ran in 1980, tried to win the nomination in 88, and then he was the candidate in 1996. Yep. And
so I guess I'm not
Clinton.
I'm not wrong in saying that it seems like he's been around multiple times, successfully or unsuccessfully.
And he's 95 and still around.
And
he was at the funeral.
Yeah,
one of
the touching moments from the Bush funeral was that he was helped up from his wheelchair to pay last respects to President Bush. And you know, again, Bob Dole, I would say to the right of many of my beliefs. I do admire his wife also because she's certainly been politically active. They're both very smart. They both love their country. And despite differences in philosophies, I think Ron would agree he's been a great servant to this great country, and he's again still around. And we admire someone like that.
And
we admire his tenacity.
95 helps his reputation. The longer you live after your political career, the more you look better somehow. It's amazing how longevity makes you look better.
yeah, and you kind of compare it to other people in office and just the way things have changed. And with this president, we're seeing how social media is so involved in the world around us. And we saw some of that with Obama. I think he balanced social media with the office fairly well. That wasn't an easy thing. And with Trump, well, I mean, we can giggle that he sometimes rules by tweet, but there's certainly things to be said about sending off tweets and providing policy information or opinions. I think Trump does it a bit too much, but certainly he's unique and does like to stay in touch with people. So I compare that to the fireside chats of Jimmy Carter and Roosevelt. And it seems like we saw Nixon on TV a lot. And although that can still be done, it seems like social media allows people to get information immediately. And you don't have to turn the TV on or the radio. You just go ahead and take your smartphone out and then see what Donald Trump has tweeted today. And this sometimes the case, you might giggle, you might say, well, that's kind of ridiculous, or you might say, well, maybe I agree with him. You never really know. But certainly and I think you'd agree, Ron, the way that presidents communicate has changed drastically and will continue to do that.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I wanted to mention that the interesting thing about living so long that you're looked at differently is Donald Trump is at the center of all kinds of turmoil and will certainly be hated and despised by many people when he leaves office and maybe whatever happens to him in the future. But if he lives to be 90 or 95, it'll be long years after he's been in office, but probably have a softer image of him because, oh my gosh, he's 93, so we'll look at him differently. It's really funny to think that, but that would be the ultimate triumph for Trump, that he outlives his bad reputation many people have for him by living so long. It really does help to live long.
Do you think, Ron, that, again, I'm notwithstanding what we think about his policies or sometimes his rash decisions or tweeting a little too much, do you think that Trump will be helpful in candidates, not just presidents, but governors, mayors, etc., balancing the use of social media with traditional methods? That Donald Trump kind of brought out the idea that you can, you know, we might giggle about it, but you can rule by tweets. You can govern, provide opinions by tweets. Will that have an influence, maybe even a positive one, on future office holders, that this can be balanced?
I would hope not, because I don't think that's the way to govern. I think it's very disorganized and very disruptive. I am not Twitter's fine, but I don't think a leader should be governing by tweets. I really don't think so. And there's nobody else really that does that at this point. And I don't think any of the Republicans or Democrats who might run are going to make it their career to be tweeting. I don't think Kasich will. I don't think Amy Klobuchar will, or Elizabeth Warren or Cory Booker or any of the others. I really would tend to think it's a trend that is not good and will be stopped when he leaves. I don't even think Mike Pence would do much of it if he became president. I would be very surprised if he did.
So you feel Donald Trump has overtweeted, and we might giggle about it, but seriously,
tremendously so. Yeah,
it's not it's unprofessional.
It's very destructive.
Right. It's unprofessional.
Yeah, firing people by tweet, by tweet is not the proper way to go. No, I think it's disgraceful.
But isn't
now,
that,
of course,
but,
we have new people leaving. Ryan Zinke is leaving. And John Kelly's leaving, you know. And but he's got so much turnover, as I wrote just yesterday. It's ridiculous. And
kind of brought to mind, Ron, you've probably heard people say, oh, my boyfriend broke up with me by text or by posting something on Facebook. And I agree, you know.
Yeah, it happens.
you know, especially if you're 30, 40 years old, act your age, not your shoe size. Don't send someone a text saying you break up. Do it the way they did it. They did it on the Brady Bunch and TV shows and movies from the 70s and 80s. And it's somewhat cowardly. And
yes,
as my mama always
it's
said,
it's also terrible. Right. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. As my mama always said, think before you talk. Which and people,
yeah, but also I think people should not on Facebook or Twitter talk about how they vomited because they felt bad or having other problems in the bathroom.
So we're speaking about someone we know who's in that age group, and yeah, I don't personally share my bathroom visits on Facebook, but regardless of age, Ron, there are people middle aged and older who really do talk about that stuff on Facebook, and yes, we do giggle.
And also
we do giggle
about their
a few times,
exploit.
But
yeah,
I think,
also talk about their sexual exploits is not appropriate either.
Yeah, and yeah, we might giggle a little bit, but honestly, I think some of it does go overboard. And the old expression, "Act your age, not your shoe size," or "Don't act like you're a giggly 13-year-old girl in junior high school arguing over who's going to date the football player." Act like a grown up. I don't know how else to say it. And often I find, in my own experience, just knowing people of all ages, that age really has little to do with how people choose to communicate and how they conduct themselves. And I've seen 13 and 14-year-olds conduct themselves in a more mature manner than people that are my age or older and really never quite know. But in social media, bottom line is we have so many ways to communicate. And I think Ron and I would agree that tweeting is good that a president does that, but this president is a bit too Twitter happy, and there's a way to balance it.
Yes.
As I said, I'm not by any means an Obama fan, but I think Obama did an excellent job of balancing social media usage with the old-fashioned ways, and he still does. He's active on social media, but doesn't overdo it. He does like to get out into the community and speak in many different ways, and maybe other politicians should learn a lesson from that. And I'm curious to see how our next president will use social media. I think you'd agree, Ron, whoever becomes our next president, even if it's Mike Pence, we're both quite curious to see how much does he or she tweet and how much does he or she balance social media, including Facebook.
I would think very little he would use it because he doesn't use it that much now, Mike Pence. I don't think so. I wanted to mention, though, before we go further, he's brought up Obama. Michelle Obama has the best-selling book of 2018, sold 3 million copies in the first few weeks, is on a national speaking tour, and one of the events is here in South Florida, and the tickets sold out in minutes. So that even if you wanted to spend a lot of money, you couldn't even get a ticket.
Yeah,
it's amazing, the reaction. No first lady memoir, or maybe presidential memoir, has ever been seen like this one. And I imagine Obama, the president, will probably sell even more than his wife. Maybe not. But it's going to be an interesting thing to see which book sells better.
And as we've discussed, people who've said, well, Michelle for president or Oprah for president, I can assure you that Oprah makes much more money on her TV show than she ever will if she were to be president. I don't think she wants to be president, but I think she's flattered that people think of her in that way. I mean, she's a very smart businesswoman, so she has some of the tools to be president. And Michelle, again, as an attorney, as a first lady, she has some qualifications, but I don't think she wants the office. And be assured, she's making a lot of greenbacks from this book, and much more than she would. And money isn't everything.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Economically,
can you imagine Melania Trump writing a memoir of her years as first lady? I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, it might be might have good illustrations, though, right? You know, having to look at Melania and maybe some older photos of her in her previous occupation.
I'm talking about writing a book about her experiences as first lady and her views of life. I don't think she has the ability to do it. Not many people are as smart as Michelle as far as first ladies. Only a few, like Hillary Clinton certainly was, Eleanor Roosevelt, but not too many, I think, would have the capability to write a memoir like Michelle Obama did.
Well, maybe we'll address that at some time in the future. Speaking with the birthday person, Dr. Ron Fineman, happy, well, we discussed which birthday it was. We're not going to mention the number again, but we're very happy to have him on as he blows out the candles on his cake. We did sing to him earlier, and he's been on the total of 91 times now between me and Scott, and talking about presidential history, the Donald, and anything else that might come to mind. And Dr. Ron Fineman is the blogger behind the ProgressiveProfessor.com, which he has done for long, long time. It has links to his radio appearances on this station and others, and talks about current happenings. He provides his opinion. Again, he does tend to the left, not heavily to the left. And again, many of his articles relate to Republicans that he's been quite fond of. So it's good to read the articles and just make your own determination. He does invite your Facebook comments, your email. That information is all on his blog, and we encourage you to read it. If you don't agree with it, that's fine. We love to debate and love to invite dialogue. Also, feel free to email me with what you think about his blog, adam@wwgh1071.com. Just like Hillary, we have a private email server, which is, of course, curated by yours truly, so you know that it's going to work wonderfully. In addition to theprogressiveprofessor.com, Ron is a regular contributor to historynewsnetwork.org. And that's a website read by a lot of people. So this past weekend, he wrote about the Republican Party. Now, listener, if you're under, you know, what would you say, Ron, 35 or 40, then listeners to this show probably think that Republican Party is very conservative and is getting more conservative. Would that be about a good timeline? Maybe somebody born, say, when Reagan was president or just before that?
Yes.
But, you know, yes. People say my age, which we're also not going to disclose, or older, know that the Republican Party has evolved and that there have been Republicans who are quite a bit to the left on some issues. I would say the main philosophy that's determined if they were Republican was probably been the economy. And whereas people type issues and fairness to all people, even if they look or act differently than you do, they're more compassionate about. Let's put it that way. Abraham Lincoln gave the Emancipation Proclamation, opening the door to an eventual outlawing of slavery. That's probably the best way to say it. And as Ron can probably comment on better than I can, but unlike many people might think that Lincoln is a Democrat. It would seem like Lincoln is far away from the philosophies of the Republicans of the 21st century, but he was a Republican. And in this article, Ron, you talk about title is the GOP wasn't always the party of right wingers. And you have photos of Lincoln, of Teddy Roosevelt, of La Follette, and of Mr. Rockefeller. All well-known Republicans who are in contrast to today's Republicans. Now, the party has been in existence.
And the article talks about senators and congressmen in these different periods that are that, too, not just these leaders. Yeah.
Right. It's been in existence for 164 years. Now, right here, it wasn't just Abraham Lincoln. Republicans in Congress brought about the 14th and 15th Amendments, which were the Civil Rights Act of 1866 and 1875, and the Ku Klux Klan Act. And I apologize, Ron, for, again, not being the expert you are. What was the gist of the Ku Klux Klan Act? How did that affect how racism was thought of here in this country?
Yeah, the Ku Klux Klan Act was passed to try to outlaw the Ku Klux Klan, which had formed in Tennessee in 1865 and was really being a very abusive and violent movement against African Americans in the South. So they prosecuted several people involved in the Klan, but they found it really very difficult to enforce it across the whole South. And the Klan still survived, and it went dormant for a while, and then it revived around World War I, and then it died off a little bit, and then it revived in the Civil Rights era in the 1950s and 60s, and now it's revived again. It's had ups and downs, but it's revived again in the age of white supremacy, which is very disturbing. So the law really was not that effective, unfortunately, long term. It's very hard just to declare it illegal because you have to have enforcement powers, and it was very hard to do that nationally.
So whether or not our president and other high-level politicians are racist, that's another topic of discussion. But we go back to the 19th century, and it would appear, Ron, that the Republicans were the ones trying to get rid of racism, to realize that we're all equal.
Yes.
And that groups like the Ku Klux Klan, freedom of speech aside, they have no business being in this country. It's not a question of freedom of speech. It's hate, which they thought was not
cool.
Right. And that, I would say, is in a bit of a contrast to what we're currently seeing. And as I inferred, balancing out hate with freedom of speech can be tricky. But I think in most cases, it's pretty obvious. And how do we eradicate hate, Ron? Do we need another Ku Klux Klan Act? Do we need something that says it's just illegal to be a member of one of those groups? Is there a solution, or will this be a recurring issue?
Better parenting. Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a recurring issue because I think most people learn hate from their families. I really think they do from parents. And if people are going to be bigoted based on race or ethnicity or religion, it's very hard to overcome it. So education and better parenting is the best way. And honestly, in different court cases, the Supreme Court has said that anyone can profess what they want to do as long as it doesn't provoke violence. So the Ku Klux Klan can meet in different places like groups like that, but once they start provoking violence, then they can be prosecuted. But it's very hard to say they cannot exist because you really can't outlaw a group just by declaring it outlawed.
Right.
It's just you have to monitor it to make sure that they don't provoke violence, which has occurred much too often.
And that's the slippery slope we're on. We have a right to say, well, I don't like, you know, fill in the minority there. I don't like these kind of people, and keep it to yourself. But when you start organizing violent acts and intimidating acts,
like Charlottesville, Virginia, for instance, last year.
Right. It's a different story.
University of Virginia.
And, you know, I don't know how to solve it, but as we like to say, I know oversimplifying, why can't we all just get along? And I know I'm, I think, living a pipe dream by saying that, but it'd be nice to think so.
Yes, unfortunately.
And I guess we'll just see what happens. And again, how the Trump administration may have encouraged this behavior, that's another topic of controversy. Certainly, there are many sides to it. But as far as I'm concerned, it's not cool. And opinions if you want to.
On Sunday on Face the Nation, CBS, Stephen Miller, who I call the most vicious person in the administration promoting racism and nativism, was on, and he was very aggressive, as he always is. He's an obnoxious person. He's like 33, 34 years of age. He really is disgraceful, but he's got a very powerful role with Trump. He writes a lot of his speeches, Stephen Miller.
You talk about in this article, Ron, again, it's about the change in the Republican Party since its inception 164 years ago. Among those radical Republicans who stand out in history are Senators Charles Sumner. And from my understanding, he pretty much invented the Republican Party. At least that's what I remember studying in school back in the Stone Age.
He's one of the early leaders of the Republican Party, yes.
One of the founding members, I guess. Okay, I remember that from when I went to school back in the Stone Ages with Fred Flintstone.
Well, he's one of the
those
radical Republicans, like Thaddeus Stevens, Charles Sumner, and Benjamin Wade. They're the ones who opposed Andrew Johnson and moved to impeach him.
And one of my favorite vice presidential names, Hannibal Hamlin, Lincoln's first vice president.
Could have been president if he hadn't been dropped by Lincoln for Andrew Johnson. Could have had Hannibal Hamlin as president when Lincoln was killed. That's one of the what-ifs that I write about in my assassinations book, yes.
In the House, we had, again, Thaddeus Stevens, James Garfield, who became president. Another good name.
He got assassinated.
I guess it's Schuyler or Schuyler Colfax. I guess you could use either pronunciation.
Schuyler Colfax, yes.
Benjamin Butler, John A. Logan, and a few others. Now, we'll talk about Garfield.
And Henry Winter Davis. Imagine living with a name like that. Henry Winter Davis. Not Summer, Winter.
we had Charles Sumner. It was an N, not an M, but Sumner.
I'm just kidding. With Henry Winter Davis. He's always known as that,
James Garfield became the 20th president, and that, you know, wasn't super, super long ago. So Garfield, Ron, he was a much more moderate Republican, not at all like Trump or what we might think of as being very conservative.
Yes. But he also got assassinated after only a few months. That's the problem. The only House member to go directly to the White House.
So we would agree that Lincoln and Garfield are turning over in their grave at what's going on currently and how the Republican Party has changed.
I would say definitely so.
Would you personally like to see the Republican Party get back to the way it was back in the late 1800s? I mean, we
either
we,
that or the early 20th century, the T.R. La Follette period, the progressive period of the Republican Party. Theodore Roosevelt, Robert La Follette, George Norris, and William Borah, people I mentioned in the article, and Hiram Johnson. That would be really ideal, but that's the beginning of the 20th century when they're promoting regulation of corporations, environmentalism, labor rights, and social justice. And now the Republican Party really doesn't do any of that.
I guess this is a question, too. If we were to have that right now, how would that differ from the Democrats? So would the Democrats find themselves going more toward Bernie Sanders, more toward a socialist model, and what we now think of as maybe a fiscally conservative Democrat, someone like the Clintons, for example, in a general sense, would that be more like the Republican Party? And again, would the Democrats go more to the left and be more like Sanders?
Probably what you're saying is correct. I want to point out that Hillary Clinton in high school was for Barry Goldwater against Lyndon Johnson in 1964. She was a Republican as a young lady. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, well, it's not unusual for people to change parties. Donald Trump used to be a Democrat, so
yes,
people certainly do change. But I guess
she was a conservative Republican in the mid-60s, Hillary Clinton, as a young woman.
I know we're just kind of fantasizing, Ron, but do you think it would be good if we had Democrats being very, very left and, again, like Sanders and that female with...
Well, not necessarily Sanders, but maybe like Warren or maybe even like Brown, Senator Brown of Ohio. I would prefer not to have a party that goes and favors corporations to such an extreme and is against all federal government programs, and pretty much which the Republican Party would like to wipe out the whole 20th century, the New Deal, the Great Society. I'm against that. So I would prefer to have a centrist party and a more leftist party. Right now we have a leftist and center party, the Democrats, and the Republicans are far right. There's very few moderates left, And I don't put John Kasich in that category in the article because John Kasich has never said he's a moderate. He calls himself a conservative, but he's a reasonable conservative, like Ben Sasse is a reasonable conservative. Ben Sasse of Nebraska, yes.
That may also, because again, I've considered myself independent for a while. And especially now where these parties have they've polarized. The Democrats,
yes. They don't cooperate on anything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially people like Sanders, who seems to be so popular, especially among younger people. He is way to the left of the way I feel. The whole word socialism brings chill to my bones. That is un-American as far as I'm concerned. However, the far right, the heartbeat bill, which we've talked about, and some of the far right philosophies of many Republicans, that also brings a chill to my bones. So it's the idea of these Republicans of the late 1800s. That sounds a lot. I probably would have liked Garfield. I mean, that sounds a bit like me, economically conservative and responsible, and socially.
Yes.
Well, keep your laws off of my body is probably the best way to say it, and be open minded about things and understand, yes, I'm all for free speech. If you don't like a certain kind of person, that's your right. Just keep the opinion to yourself. And if there is violence and intimidation involved, that's extremely uncool. And that's...
Yeah, I wanted to mention CNN had a poll about presidential candidates for the Democrats, and the one far ahead at the moment, at least in polls, is Joe Biden, who's, of course, more of a centrist. But behind him is Sanders, but quite a bit behind him. And right behind him, really breathing down his neck, is Beto O'Rourke of Texas. And I think a lot of people who were enthused by Sanders are starting to go after Beto, although Beto has not announced if he's going to run. He's keeping us guessing throughout this month. But he suddenly has surged to be third above everybody else, just behind Sanders by a couple of points and way behind Joe Biden at the moment.
So it would be logical, Ron, that I'm not the only person who said neither party is my cup of tea, and I'll just be an independent and I'll keep my philosophies. But it again, and just talking to you and reading your articles, these Republicans from the late 1800s, early 1900s. I know Roosevelt. I've always liked Teddy Roosevelt. He seems to be pretty consistent with a lot of my beliefs, and that party, that's socially responsible, socially progressive, fiscally conservative. Although we have people that are like that, there's not real any specific word for it. And being an independent may just be the way to go. And since I don't plan on running for office, that's my affiliation, and that's probably gonna.
There's only one. there's only one thing that's not good about being an independent. You, in most states, you cannot vote in the primaries if you're not registered either as a Democrat or a Republican. A few states allow it, but I don't think Ohio does.
If you're not registered with either
party, you cannot vote for governor nominee of either party or Senate. So that's the bad part of it.
Right.
You know?
And how that works, which, again, is probably part of my eclectic nature, is you determine when you go to the polls which party you want to be, and you can change it. And I'm pretty sure I'm now a Democrat because I voted in the Democratic primary because it was more interesting.
But then on Election Day, you could vote independently.
Right.
Anybody can split their vote to anybody they want.
Right, but again, for the next primary, I will determine which one I want to vote for. And I guess you could counter that by saying,
deadline.
Well, could you just vote for both?
You have to change.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to have a certain deadline to change. You can't do it on that. Most, I think you have to do it a certain amount of time ahead. You have to know it. Otherwise, you're locked out. Yeah.
But based upon which one you find most interesting, and I just kind of pick, which one is most important to me? And I'm pretty sure I'm listed as a D, but that doesn't mean that I'm a Democrat. It's just the primary that I chose to vote in. And as a private citizen, that's something I can do. And if I were to run for office, you can run as an independent or be an alternative party like the Green Party, for example. And I would say, as you probably would agree, Ron, if it's a smaller scale election, a city council of a smaller city, mayor, the party isn't quite as important. But if it's governor or higher or in Congress, you probably should have a party, but you don't necessarily have to. You'll certainly get the backing of that party if you win. That's part of it. And we take a look at the mayor of Marion, Scott Schertzer. He's, to me, is pretty middle of the road. And it's this, Marion is what he concentrates on. I think he does a good job. You know, he's not perfect, but the good well outweighs the bad. I know he does love the area and wants it to prosper and grow.
Which party is he registered in?
He's a Democrat, but ironically, because Marion County is quite Republican, as is the surrounding area. So does a party really, really mean much? And my opinion of the mayor is he seems kind of middle of the road, and a lot of the issues really aren't party-based. Bringing jobs to Marion, keeping Marion safe, revitalizing the downtown, that isn't really a Democrat or Republican issue, and that's typical of a lot of mayors. But it's different compared to our senators, Sherrod Brown and Mr. Portman. They certainly need to have an affiliation with the party because that, I think...
Yeah, interestingly, I saw an article that listed Rob Portman as a potential challenger, and not from him, but they're saying he could be a possible challenger to Donald Trump for the Republican nomination. I never heard that before, but I guess he is a possible candidate. He's conservative, but he's still sort of like mainstream. He's not crazy.
Yeah, as we've talked about, who isn't going to run for president, and every week we get closer to the primaries and caucuses, and we shall find out. And I also saw the article that
Democrats.
I also saw the article that said that Sanders and Biden were considered the top Democratic nominees, and they're both getting
but
up
Biden's
there.
Ahead.
Yeah, getting up there in years. So we'll see if that
also
comes.
Also, in that list of nine, those have 3% or more. They had Kerry coming back after all these years, who would also be over 80 during the term, and Bloomberg. So four of the nine were going to be over, not yet, we're going to be over 80, and the others are much younger. So it's a battle for the age over the youth or younger, newer generation. So it's part of the whole battle, because to have four people that would reach 80 in the top nine in the poll is an indication that they have a stronghold, but is it going to be enough to win the nomination and the election?
Yeah, it's you never quite know, and I'm sure next time we talk, we will have even different, a different list of people, and who is
and
who
I wanted
isn't.
To mention three women are on the list: Harris, and also Klobuchar and Warren are in that list of the five also. So it's very interesting how people perceive it, but it doesn't mean what's thought now is going to happen, because never has the front runner ever been nominated who leads 2 years ahead. So probably Joe Biden is not lucky to be number one right now.
Like with Ron, I have no problem with Klobuchar being a serious contender or even president, and I wouldn't mind Nikki Haley either.
I like her a lot.
Right, a rather moderate Republican. So we'll find out. And I'm sure the more we prognosticate, the more we'll be surprised. So we'll just wait and see what happens. Come crunch time. Almost time to end our show. Time flies when you're having fun. We've not talked too much about the blog entries because I keep veering off into tangents, but they are fun tangents because, as I see it, Ron, this evolution of the Republican Party is just fascinating. And the more I think about it, yeah, okay, I'm quirky, I'm an independent, but my philosophies are pretty consistent with the early Republicans, who are not like the current Republicans. And I would say that if someone were to say, Adam, your politics sound like Abraham Lincoln, I would say, well, thank you. One of the greatest people ever to walk the face of the earth. But again, I think a lot of people, especially younger people, would say that Lincoln was probably a Democrat. But they'd be wrong.
Even Teddy Roosevelt, you think of as a Democrat, a modern Democrat,
yeah,
but he was a Republican.
Right, especially with his sixth cousin four times removed, whatever the relationship was, being one of our most liberal Democratic presidents who was considered by some to be a socialist. That's up for debate. But yeah, as we've talked about, Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt are related, but they're like in sixth cousins four times removed or something. They're not closely related. And of course, Franklin Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt, which was also her maiden name, they were also related. She was like Teddy Roosevelt's aunt or something. I guess you know, Ron, but
Teddy Roosevelt's niece, not aunt. She's younger.
Yeah,
the niece
okay,
of
well,
Teddy
one,
Roosevelt,
one of
yes.
those. But yeah, the Roosevelts, they were like fourth. They were like fourth cousins or something, right? I think you know what the actual relation was. They were distantly related, but they had the same name.
Yes. So she didn't have to learn a new last name. I wanted to mention before we go, Nancy Pelosi proved at that meeting with Trump and Pence and also Chuck Schumer that she could overwhelm a bully, a braggart, a president who was unfit to be president. That was an amazing meeting where he's threatening to shut down the government. We'll see if he does. But meanwhile, people are making fun of Mike Pence sitting there looking like a mannequin, saying nothing, and even closing his eyes a few times. I think he was starting to doze off. It's just an embarrassment to the vice president. He said nothing in the middle of this three-way shouting match of Pelosi and Schumer and Trump. It was not the greatest moment for any of them. But I think for Pelosi, it made a really stand out that she could deal with a tough guy like Trump and overcome him.
Yes, it would seem like whenever Donald Trump gets together with other governmental people, there will be Saturday Night Live skits, memes, and people just giggling. And, you know,
yes.
Laughter is the best medicine, and it seems like my funny bone has been tickled quite a bit since January 20th of 2017. Well, Ron, that's it for today. Time just has flown, and we really didn't talk too much about your articles, but I think we did get into some interesting stuff. I mean, the History News Network, but not the Progressive Professor articles. We did get into interesting stuff about the change in the Republican Party. Kind of, I've decided my politics are consistent with the early Republicans, and again, Lincoln, Garfield, Teddy Roosevelt, which I kind of knew before. But again, that's quite different from the turn that the party has taken, so I'll remain as an independent. Of course, discussing who is and who isn't running for president, and of course, always a few giggles about the occupant of the Oval Office, as we like to do. I want to wish you again a happy birthday, Ron, and many more to come. Thank you for
being
part of our station. Have a great rest of your day.